But Tate, I'm going to say this to you.
Yeah.
$14 trillion in this space, yeah, and almost half of that now in alternatives, people are figuring it out. And you see those numbers peak when the market has collapses and people are like, enough, I need to take control.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. I'm your host, Tate Duryea, here with my co-host, Ryan Gibson. How you doing, man?
Hey, Tate, how's it going?
Pretty well. Just had an amazing conversation with Carrie Cook of Preferred Trust Company. You brought this person to the show. You want to tell us a little bit about your background with Carrie and their company?
Yeah. So we send all of our investors over to Preferred Trust Company when they're thinking about investing with their retirement account. And probably one of the biggest questions I get all the time is, Ryan, how do I use my 401k, or can I use my Fidelity or my Schwab or my T. Rowe Price or anything that I have to invest in your deals or invest in alternative investments or syndications? And the answer is maybe. Depends. Right. But in the show, we're going to dive into it. And Carrie is one of my favorite experts in the space that's going to just dive right into the step-by-step process on how to use retirement to invest in alternative investments. One of the, you know, tax strategy or one of the investment strategies of the very wealthy. So,
yeah. And it's, to me, it's a great way to access capital, right? Because real estate, typically the deals that we're doing are very tax advantaged if you're investing in with cash. However, we have a lot of money that's sitting there in, old dusty 401k plans from previous airlines. Maybe if you haven't rolled one of those over yet, or sitting in an IRA account that's just invested in a mutual fund where you can unlock those funds in order to get them working harder for you in private placements. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you made a light bulb go off. This is for the regional pilot going to the major. This is for the major airline pilot that may have a retirement account sitting there. And this is for our military men and women as well. At the very end, we're going to touch on TSPs and their eligibility as well.
Exactly. So when you're going from one job to another, it's a qualifying event that allows you to sort of unlock, unjail that money. Because as you're working for, say, your major airline for that 20, 30 years, that money in your 401k is locked up. But as soon as you retire, that money can be rolled. One thing I wanted to mention is that we do not really get into the taxes here. So if you're looking, if you already are familiar with the self-directed IRA space, but you're looking for information on the tax benefits, drawbacks, UBIT, that sort of stuff, we're going to cover that in a different episode. This is a great episode. If you want to get in, realize what you can do with your money and how to do it. So with that, let's get to the show.
Well, Carrie Cook, welcome to the show. Really great to have you on the Passive Income Pilots podcast to talk about IRAs. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things about investing in real estate was that I got to actually use my retirement account to do it. And well, there's some hoops you got to jump through, and there's some things that you have to do before you can do that. You can't just go on your Fidelity account and make a selection and start investing in alternative assets like real estate. Carrie, why don't you give us an overview of what Preferred Trust Company does to enable investors to do that?
Sure. Well, you kind of alluded to it, right? The vast majority of individuals have IRAs at an institutional or an institution like a Schwab, a Fidelity, a TD Ameritrade, something along those lines. And I think most of us just assume because we have an IRA that we can invest in anything we want with the exception of what the IRS says we cannot invest in, which really is only two things. That's life insurance policies and collectibles, but everything else we can invest in. So then why in the heck does Schwab and TD Ameritrade and all those other guys not allow us to invest in these alternatives? Because that's a lot of what we're hearing about right now, especially when the market has collapsed like it has. Well, they don't do it because it's a lot of work. It's quite tedious to be able to allow alternative investments, which is why self-directed custodians exist. That's where Preferred Trust Company steps in, where we kind of give the individual the opportunity to diversify their portfolio outside of market volatility. You can get that market volatility by working with the institutional firms, but to diversify that a bit, you need to work with a self-directed custodian that will allow alternatives like real estate, as you mentioned, precious metals, digital currency, all other kinds of things that people are interested in diversifying their portfolio in.
And a follow-up question to that really is, you kind of mentioned alternative investing and in self-directed. Self-directed is probably one of the most spun marketing terms, because yeah, I remember when I was at a regional, I think it was a Fidelity 401k. Mm-hmm. I went to my mainline air carrier. So I had what's called a qualifying event, which I know you'll touch on here in a minute.
Yeah.
And I put my money with a Morgan Stanley financial advisor. And I heard about the self-directed IRA stuff. And I went and I called them up and I said, hey, I just learned about investing in real estate syndications. And I know that we have an account set up with you now. Is this self-directed? And he said, yeah, it's self-directed. You can invest in whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, because I couldn't invest in syndications like real estate. So can you talk about, like, can you kind of highlight that, shine more light on that self-directed phrase? Because I feel like that's thrown around so much, and it's just kind of a limiting definition.
It is. And I think we both like to use it. I think the traditional institutions, and the self-directed custodians like to use the word self-directed. The reason why we do is we're competing for the same dollars. Let's just be honest and just get rid of all the bull here. We're doing it because from the institutional side, we're saying you can self-direct, right? You can put it into stocks, bonds, mutual funds. You have all these options over here. You just have to pick from our suite of products, right? That's self-directing to them. To us, to the self-directed custodian, it's putting the control in the investor's hands. They are choosing what they want to invest in without the custodian dictating that to them. It's not a suite of products that we're offering. It's a suite of products that other investment sponsors, true alternative options for them. They choose it. We then make sure that their IRA stays qualified. And we, at their direction, invest in those alternatives. So two very different platforms, both using the word self-directed.
It's kind of like buying a car from a generic car manufacturer, and they're going to basically put all the options on it for you and say, you can pick whatever color you want on this car.
Mm-hmm.
But you're like a car with no options pre-selected, right? You're just providing the vehicle, and then you can really invest in whatever is deemed acceptable by the IRS and not governed by a Fidelity or a Schwab. So really, really important clarification there, because I think a lot of pilots will call in and they'll say, hey, you know, I got this. I can use my Fidelity account because I was told it was self-directed. But then we find out that really it's not self-directed. It's just self-directed in those limited options. So really important clarification. So as a custodian, then, are providing those options. How do you guys make money? I mean, how do you make money versus how the other asset, you know, other institutional shops make money? Can we kind of dive into that, like why there's differences and what fees you can charge?
Oh yeah, I love talking about fees. No, none of us want to pay fees. So the beauty of an IRA at an institution is they advertise it as free. Okay, I think we've all figured out that nothing in life is free. So the way that they make money is they make money by investing your dollars that you maybe have chosen and taking a fee on that investment. Remember, they're their products. So their products have fees associated with them, usually percentages based on what you invest and sometimes based on the income generated. And with that, that's how they get paid. Therefore, they could charge you a free IRA. From a self-directed custodian, we do not make money off the investments because we don't provide investments. And because we don't provide investments, the only thing that we can make money on is our services that we provide. So that's how we make money, is charging you a fee for our service. An example of that would be to administer your self-directed IRA. We will charge you an annual fee that you will pay for us to administer it. What that means and what those fees include is, one, making sure your IRA stays qualified and compliant, first and foremost. Two, all tax reporting is done by the custodian in relation to your IRA. Contributions, distributions, the processing of investment fees, those sorts of transactions are all fees associated. Every custodian charges fees differently. Some are all-encompassing, and some are onesie-twosie, charging you for each and every single transaction that you're requesting.
Yeah, Carrie, so I'd like to ask real quick, just to give our listeners just a big concept, context of the entire landscape of the self-directed industry. Mm-hmm. Let's back up to what an IRA is. You know, it's an individual retirement account. What are the benefits of having one? How do most people end up with one? And what are some of the benefits of switching over from a institution, like we were saying, to a self-directed custodian itself?
Well, first of all, you know, it's interesting. I have always described an IRA as one of the greatest gifts the government's ever given us. And I don't want to say the only, but a truly wonderful gift, because rarely does anybody get to say the word tax-free income. Right. And so an IRA allows individuals to invest in their retirement. Now, given the fact that they can only do a certain amount each year, the income generated off of that investment could be tax-free to you if you set it up in a Roth IRA. There's very few vehicles in this country that allow you tax-free income. I know there's some insurance products that do, but a set up government-issued account with tax-free income. I mean, our government is run off of taxes. So the fact that they're allowing this, I believe, is one of the greatest gifts that the government has ever provided to U.S. citizens.
Right. So what are some of the different types of accounts? Like what are some of the different types of tax advantaged accounts that we might see under this sort of umbrella of tax advantaged accounts?
Yeah, there's really four IRA account types. And don't be fooled if you see something out there, you know, if somebody tries to get fancy and say that there's, you know, some pilot IRA account. There isn't. There's four types of IRAs. There's a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, a SEP IRA, and a simple IRA. Most commonly, you'll see a traditional IRA because they've been around the longest. Second to that would be a Roth IRA because of the tax-free income that you receive by establishing it under a Roth IRA. Now, the SEPs and the simples are used typically for small businesses. So I don't know if we really want to get into that specific aspect, but I think the traditional and the Roth is really important to understand, because all 401k plans offer both traditional and Roth options. Right. Some have both, some have one or the other. So when we're converting those funds over to over to an IRA, it's usually coming in one of those forms. Now, your traditional IRA, you're not paying taxes when it goes in. In a Roth IRA, you're paying the taxes when it goes in, your contribution. Contribution levels are lower than what you would typically see in a 401k plan or a SEP or a simple, but they're ratcheting up, but slowly ratcheting up.
Right. So to clarify, what we mean, and I think most people have their head wrapped around this, but for anyone that doesn't, when we say a traditional is tax-free, it means if you made $300,000 this year and you put, let's say, $5,000 for easy math into a traditional IRA, you'd be able to take your taxable income from $300 down to $295. Is that correct? Vice versa, if you put it into a Roth, you're going to have to pay taxes on that full $300,000 worth of income, but that $5,000 goes into the Roth account. It can grow forever, and you're never going to pay capital gains tax on the gains. I think that's a fair way to break it down, right? To make it simple.
It is.
So because of the extraordinarily low contribution limits, I feel like IRAs kind of sometimes get swept aside as sort of an unsexy vehicle because it just takes so long for money to accumulate in there. Ryan, I'm sure you've seen this, right? Which is why the rollover is so powerful. So do you want to touch on that? And where are some, you mentioned qualifying event, right? So if you, Carrie, what are the contribution limits today for IRAs?
So your traditional and your Roth IRA are at $6,500 a year. Right. If you're over the age of 50, it's an additional $1,000. So there is a little bit of, you know, advantage to being a little bit older. Thank you very much. I'll take my advantages. So yeah, those are smaller limits. Right now, there is a window of opportunity, though, that you can still make your contribution for 2022 up until, what is it, April 18th this year. And you could also make your contribution for 2023.
Excellent. So if you need a little bit of a tax boost for 2022, mm-hmm. you could always
make that
last minute contribution for your 2022.
Yeah, we have a lot of people doing it.
Excellent. Well, I know if you want to invest in one of Ryan or my deals, our minimums are usually $50,000. So it takes a long time to get an IRA up to that amount, right? So do you, Ryan, do you want to?
Yeah, that's
I know you've got some questions on some rollovers, right?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. It takes a long time at 6,500 bucks a year to contribute up to the $50,000 minimum you'd expect to see on syndications. But what I've helped countless pilots do is take their old IRA or their old 401k, I should mm-hmm. say, from a previous employer and roll it into a self-directed IRA so that when they go to the majors or whatever, they've got this pile of cash. I mean, like personally, my wife mm-hmm. and I maxed out our 401k every single year. We were at the regionals and, hit the IRS limit that I could contribute every year. And so we had a sizable retirement account when I left the regionals and went to the majors. I mean, at least for what we made at the time.
Yeah.
And so we had a big, nice IRA, that we could invest in. And then of course you can put the $6,500 a year, every year thereafter. So just for pilots out there that, you know, are losing faith and being able to build this up, you know, by just contributing to it every year. And my understanding, it's by individual. So if you're married, that bumps up to about 13K a year, right? If you were to contribute as to a joint custodianship, or how does that work? Okay.
Yeah. Each account is individualized when it comes to an IRA, but yes, the two could contribute as long as they are earning income.
That's great.
Right.
So for rollovers, I always like to, kind of coach folks to understand they have like options, right? So like you leave a regional airline, you go to a major and you have this 401k. There's like things you can do with that 401k.
Yeah, the worst thing I ever hear is people are like, oh yeah, I just rolled it into my, my new airline's 401k. It's like, God, you had such a great opportunity there.
literally put it in jail because now you can't touch it until you retire.
And that doesn't come around very often when you can get out of jail card.
It does not.
Yeah, well, let's hope it doesn't happen often in a pilot's career. I mean, typically you go from regional to major, and hopefully that's all you do. A lot of people, I'm on my fourth airline, so... hopefully you only have that one in service, unless you want to unlock that money again and you made the mistake of rolling it into your current plans 401k. But talk about the other options. I mean, what are your options when you get to this stage, and how long do you have, and is there a time limit? And I also want to touch on too, Carrie, one other thing after that is because I think this is another misconception, is that if I roll my 401k into an IRA, it's a taxable event, which it's absolutely not. Can you kind of speak to that as well?
Yeah. I think a lot of this is just fear factor, right? I think when we move from one employer to the other, a couple of things happen. First and foremost, the employer you're leaving will usually send out a letter from your, plan provider that says you have 90 days to move this. And you're like, what do I do with it? What do I do with it? And by then you're probably employed someplace else. And guess what the first option is? Number one option, roll it into another 401k. That's right. What they are pushing. So that's naturally what people are going to do because they don't know they have other options. So kudos to you guys for talking about it. Because you do have other options, there are qualifying events that happen. And when a qualified event happens, which includes when you move from one employer to another, that's a qualifying event. That allows you to unlock those funds from that 401k plan and put it into what I'm going to refer to as a self-directed IRA for you to diversify your portfolio outside of market volatility, right? You're going to start with your next employer. And from my knowledge and what I've read, you know, most of the employers are contributing, you know, 16% or greater to your guys' 401k plans, right? So that's a tremendous amount of money that's being contributed there. But again, it's locked up again. And it's subject to, I had to read a lot this afternoon just to learn a little bit about what happens and what has happened to pilots. But, you know, that whole pension plan debacle was alarming. But then we turn that into a 401k plan, which has the same volatility scenario happening to some degree, right? And so I was like, whoa, what is going on here? So when you guys are changing positions or changing jobs, man, that is the opportunity to stop and really think about diversifying your portfolio outside of that market volatility, to giving yourselves, you know, a fighting chance to invest in these alternatives to potentially change the dynamic when the market does have corrections. Definitely. So yeah, that is an opportunity for sure.
And I want to just drive this point home that, you know, Ryan and I, for all of our listeners, we're not providing financial advice here, but it's a good idea, at least in my opinion, I think in Ryan's opinion, to diversify outside the stock market, because over, you know, 20, 30, 40 years that we have in these careers at airlines, that 16% that's going into your 401k, whether you contribute or not, is going to be a very large nest egg. And it has to be invested in the equities markets, in the publicly traded markets. You can't take your 401k and say, hey, I want to invest it with Ryan, or I want to invest it with Tate or some other syndicator, or in real estate outside of a REIT, right? So it allows you, by having this alternative self-directed IRA that's away from the public markets, you can have an additional retirement account, an additional tax sheltered vehicle that is investing in something that's less volatile and is more diversified.
Yeah, so I'll just back that on. Yeah, I got excited too when Kerry brought up this whole, you know, diversification. Look at the most successful endowments in the world, you know, like the Yale endowment or the Harvard endowment. You know, they have asset allocation into alternative investments of at least 10%, maybe more. So when you think about, like, okay, I'm a 30-year-old regional airline pilot. I just got scooped up by the majors. I've got, you know, a couple hundred grand, maybe 300 grand in my 401k. I'm rolling that into a self-directed IRA. First of all, you don't have to roll all of it into a self-directed IRA. Number one, I'm going to make that point. But maybe you say, hey, I'm going to be making now $300,000-$400,000 for the foreseeable future. They're going to be matching 16% of that. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be contributing to it as well. Very quickly, you're going to be overextended into the public markets and overextended into the stock market. And really not have a lot of other diversification strategies. So again, you can start small in alternatives. You know, maybe if you have $200,000 or $300,000, you can only roll, maybe you decide, you know, I'm gonna roll $100,000 of this into an IRA, and I'm gonna pick two sponsors to go find an alternative investment to invest in, like real estate. And then, you know, I put the rest in my plan, or maybe the other option is I put it into an IRA with a traditional brokerage shop outside of my plan sponsor, because that money doesn't go into jail. It just sort of goes into this intermediary where you could still roll it into a self-directed IRA at a point in the future. And I think that's also important, which is why, you know, why go into my employer sponsored plan when I don't have to? I can put it in the same thing with another brokerage shop outside of my employer, right? You put it in the employer, now you've ruined all your options, right? And that's why, you know, I can say pretty confidently that, you know, in my personal situation, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. And keep this in mind too, just to that point, just because you roll it into, you know, a Schwab or a Fidelity, something that feels safe to you, at least initially, you can leave it in cash. You don't even have to immediately start picking other investments. Give yourself a little bit of time to consider all of your investment options. So just keep that in mind, because before you can move it over to a self-directed custodian, you're going to have to liquidate it. So it's you funny. Don't want to subject it to volatility again to potentially lose before you roll it over. So just
I have a really funny pilot story from the crash pad. This is great for the podcast. So I had a friend who left the regionals like in 2008, got his check cashed out from his previous employer, sent to his house. He was lazy. He left it on his mantle and it was sitting there. It was his entire 401k. He didn't invest it. He didn't put it in the market. The market completely crashed, right? And he was just like, he forgot about this money, right? So the market literally went to like zero, basically. And he had completely yanked out like the day before. It's amazing. Wow. It's an amazing lazy investor story. Anyway, great stories from the crash pad when I was back at Masaba Airlines. So anyway, so, you know, kind of switching gears here a little bit. So I want to take the pilot back. They're at the regional, or they identify, you mentioned the 90 days and the 90 days that you have to do something with this. I mean, I've run into pilots that have had money sitting at their old plan sponsors for like years. And they're like, man, I left that airline like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and I didn't do anything with that retirement account. Can I do something with it now, even though years have passed? Can they go grab that money and roll it into an SDI IRA?
Yeah, they absolutely can. And it just depends on how the employer has set up their 401k plan documents. Some of them will allow you to keep it there indefinitely. But be cautious, because if the employer decides they don't want to pay for the plan administration any longer, then you're going to receive a check in the mail and taxes will have been taken out of it. They call it an indirect distribution. And, you know, that's a little bit more difficult to roll over to a self-directed IRA. So you do want to have a direct rollover, not an indirect rollover. So do not have them issue you a check to sit on the mantle, because in most circumstances, it doesn't work out very well for you. You want to have it be a direct rollover, so you're not paying taxes on that, kind of going back to the myth of, if I move this out of my 401k plan, I'm going to be taxed. That is not true. If it's a like-to-like rollover or like-to-like transfer, then you are not taxed on that at all. But let's say they happen to send you a check, because guess what? It happens. If you can return that check to them and you have them then do a direct rollover to a self-directed custodian, you do not have to worry about any tax consequences to that. But let's say they send you the check. You have 60 days to get those funds back into a qualified plan without any tax implications. So that's important to remember as well. So there are a couple of caveats there where custodians, if they're willing, can help you out to ensure that we can identify where those funds came from so you do not have those tax implications. Because if you receive a $300,000 check, you're going to pay a pretty stiff penalty for that.
Look, the main takeaway here is if you're in this situation, give Tate and I a call, and we're not the expert in doing this, but we'll get you pointed in the right direction. I mean, if you're like, oh my God, I'm leaving and I don't know what to do and I'm getting all these letters, just get in touch with either Tate or I, and we will help you out. So
absolutely. Something else I was going to mention is, you know, you have that 90 days. It's not like that isn't a busy time, right? You know, as a pilot, you're probably moving, you're going to Indoc at a major airline. You've got a lot on your plate. The last thing you're thinking about is where to put that money. So yeah, reach out to one of us, or at the very least, roll it into a Schwab or TD Ameritrade IRA that's not part of your employer plan. That way it's not in jail. It can then be subsequently rolled into a self-directed retirement account with Carrie or a number of other self-directed custodians when the time is right.
That's what I did. That's exactly what I did. I mean, I was going from a regional to a major. I moved across the country. I'm in Indoc. I'm learning a new airplane. The last thing I care about is you know, this thing, right? And so thank God my financial advisor is like, dude, whatever you do, don't put it in your new company's plan. So that was great advice, you know, at a minimum. So Okay, so let's talk about some of the downsides here, because I want to get real with this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's great about a Fidelity or a Schwab or whatever, in being a lazy investor, is you just sort of put it in the 2045 or the 2040 plan. Mm-hmm. You don't even think about it, right? I think there's a double-edged sword with IRA investing, because now you're fully in control, right? Mm-hmm. And so now you can decide to put it with these alternative investment opportunities. You can also, though, carry, from my understanding, you can invest it in the stock market like you would anything else. So you could actually find a similar fund that maybe your employer would offer and put it in that fund. But you're kind of a little bit more responsible now for the account. Can you kind of speak to that and sort of some of the downsides to it?
Yeah. I don't think any of us on this podcast claim to be, you know, financial advisors, right? Because if we were, it'd be a different podcast. And because we're not financial advisors, chances are we're not managing funds or mutual funds. And fund managers have a very unique talent, right? This is what they do all day long. You fly planes, they manage money. And they watch the markets, and, you know, they're up early in the morning and they don't stop working until the bell rings. Like, this is what they do for a living. And, you know, that's not who we are. And so there's some risk in that. Sometimes we think, well, you know, let's go buy Johnson & Johnson stock because, you know, those are the Q-tips we use, whatever, whatever it happens to be. It's a known product to us. We're like, yep, yeah, that's a safe bet. But is it? Like, have you watched what's going on with that stock? No, but you know the name, right? That's probably not a good pick for you. But when you self-direct, you're responsible for what you're picking now. It's not that professional behind the scenes. That's all they do, you know, 24 hours a day. Now you are actually having to take some responsibility. So whether it's that stock, whether it's investing in an alternative, whether it's, you know, digital currency, because everybody's talking about it and you think you should get in, you know, be careful. The due diligence behind that is so, so gravely important. You know, knowing whom you're investing in, what the asset is, you know, who's behind these fund managers, those sorts of things. It's super, super important. And it creates a tremendous amount of risk that I appreciate you bringing that up, because a lot of times we don't hear about that, right? So, you know, be careful. We, as well as custodians, are also doing some vetting for whom you're investing with. And the reason why we do that is because, you know, sometimes we receive fund documents and we're like, oh, okay, well, let's check it out and see if they filed with the SEC. And we look them up and they haven't. And we're like, ooh, okay. Wow. So, you know, we will mention that to our clients to say, you may want to go back and ask this question, because when we were kind of checking our due diligence boxes, we didn't see this. And a lot of times we're able to protect investors from investing in something that could have been pretty detrimental to the potential loss of their capital. So, you know who you're investing with, because it's not my job as the custodian to say no to you. I do take some responsibility in just quickly vetting the companies, making sure they're in good standing, you know, making sure they have proper filings, but ultimately it's up to you.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, Carrie, because I also, you know, I appreciate you do that, because a lot of custodians don't do that.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
But I also want to highlight, like, you're not their fiduciary either, right?
No.
So, you know, even if they do file with the SEC, even if they do have the correct information, you're on your own. And yep. So, you know, as much as I love the freedom of what an SDIRA does, it's enabled me to invest in really great projects. And mm-hmm. I've been able to find great operators, and I've been able to find, you know, the Tates and the Spartans and the other operators I invest with of the world, and make great income. Mm-hmm. But again, there's downsides to it as well. And I'll admit that I've invested with some bad operators too. And I made those mistakes early on in my investing career. When I got my IRA all set up, I was all hot to trot. And I think that anybody who walked in the room next was going to get, you know, 50K of my IRA money. And unfortunately, that ended up being a bad actor. That's a different episode, a different podcast. But, you know, it's really important that, yes, it gives us the freedom. Yes, it gives us the diversification of our portfolio. and it opens up a new avenue. But you got to hang with the right people, and you got to find the right operators, and you got to surround your network. And that's the reason why we put this podcast together, to bring together, and not just stuff that me and Tate are doing, but the whole community, to help vet and educate and get experience before people go running off and jump into something that they're not really realizing what they're doing, but also shine a flashlight on the opportunities that are out there as well. So thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So talk to annual reporting or what like the year is like. You know, you set this IRA up, mm-hmm. and what happens?
What's the experience? Yeah. I mean, before we even get into annual reporting, let's jump into what's the experience like of setting one up. So if someone reaches out to you, which we encourage them to do, what does the process look like? And what are the fees like? And another question that I'm going to tack on for it is, what's the minimum amount that makes sense to roll over? Because there are fees associated with it. And so until your account value gets up to a certain point, it might not make sense to float those fees, right?
Yes. So let's talk about ease. First and foremost, let's say we have a qualifying event. We have a 401k plan that you now want to do a direct rollover into a traditional or Roth IRA. Now, keep in mind that your 401k plan may have both options. A lot of 401k plans now have both options. So you may be rolling over into opening up two accounts, one traditional account, one Roth account. So keep in mind, when your employer is making contributions to your 401k plan, they're going in as a traditional, in theory, think of it this way, a traditional IRA, right?
Always.
If you're making contributions, you may be making contributions into a Roth 401k plan. So you may need to open two accounts, but we can evaluate that with you. What we typically like to see is, send us a statement, help us out here. Let's make sure that we are requesting the right items from your 401k provider. A lot of times that rollover can be done over the phone, which is a quick, easy, simple process. Typically with 401k plans, they are done over the phone. If it's coming from an institutional firm, we do that through a transfer or conversion form. We, as the receiving custodian, will help you fill that out so we can make sure transferring over is like to like. So if it's a traditional IRA going into a traditional IRA, we'll help you complete that. Then we'll fill out an application and make sure that we have all of your personal information so that we can do our due diligence. We do operate as a bank. So we report to the Financial Institutions Division. So all of the Bank Securities Act, anti-money laundering, all of that will have to be followed. So we'll have to do our due diligence on you. Once we get that account open, which again, if you fill out the paperwork online, takes about 5 to 10 minutes, we'll do our part. We'll wait for the funds to come in. Once those funds come in, we'll notify you that the funds are available. And then you select the investment and work with the investment sponsor to figure out what you need to do to invest with them. Now, when you are investing with an investment sponsor, in some circumstances, the custodian will need to execute the documents on behalf of your IRA, because the custodian is the one responsible for making sure that your IRA stays compliant. So those funds are no longer, I don't want to say they're not your funds, but they're being controlled by the custodian. So we want to make sure that we are working with you as you are investing in these different investment types to make sure that all the paperwork is being completed properly. So it's vested in your IRA, therefore not creating any tax consequences to you. So that it's pretty quick. I would say from beginning to end, depending upon where the funds are coming from, within about a 2-week period, safely on average, funds are available for you to start investing. Sometimes quicker. Sometimes it's 48 hours and we have funds and we're ready to go. Sometimes you do work with some organizations that are really slow to move the funds out. And I'm going to give you a little tidbit here. The reason why we're so slow is because we also invest your funds, right? So as a custodian, these financial institutions, we're not just sitting on a stockpile of cash. So when you're requesting your funds to be moved from one custodian to another, sometimes we also need to do some liquidating of investments in order to move those funds. So there have been times where we have waited up to 3 months to get funds.
Wow. Which, can you mention a few of the plan sponsors that are real slow?
Just so people have a heads up. I feel like this is where I said, have one of those trays where it's like, Carrie, you can either eat the snake eye or you can answer the question.
All right. We'll keep it confidential. But keep in mind that, you know, what you don't want to do is find a deal that you want to invest in and then call Carrie and say, hey, my funds are due in 6 days. Can we make the transfer?
Yes.
Get a little ahead of it.
Yes. I would say most of the time, the 401k providers are a little bit slower. Where the transfers from the institutional firms are quicker. I can tell you some of them are 48 hours, some of them are a week, 2 weeks. I mean, they have a pattern. You know, as employment levels go up and down, sometimes the pattern gets a little quicker. But for the most part, I would say the average is 2 weeks from beginning to end, all things completed.
But you know what I love about Preferred Trust Company is that while this process is going on, you probably are like, hey, I want to roll over my IRA and invest in Tate's deal with Turbine Capital. And Preferred Trust Company is, we're all going to be connected in communication. So Tate's going to know what your status is to kind of help the process along. And you're going to get kind of frequent and regular communications about that so that you're not lost in the sauce. Because again, you know, this might be happening while you're going through new hire training or while you're trying to focus on other things in life. Maybe it's just family issue or otherwise. So I like how there's like open communication and there you can kind of help the person through each step of the process. And the reason why we prefer Preferred Trust Company at Spartan is because of this extra customer service. You can pick up the phone, you can call somebody. It's, you know, Carrie has a theory. I'm going to butcher this a little bit, but high touch or low touch, I think is what you call it. And, you know, where you guys can like totally white glove the experience and really walk the investor through it, or you can send them a link and they can kind of figure it all out on their own. So there's really kind of both options for both kind of investors. So that's great.
Absolutely. We're like a necessary evil. Investment sponsors need us to move the funds, right? So yeah. So we
can you just walk us through that process? Because I've personally worked with, I think, three different self-directed IRA sponsors with my own IRA. We have, over the course of the 3 years that we've been in operation for as a business, we've gone through three different service providers that we've been recommending and, you know, to various degrees of success. So what does that look like when people onboard with you?
So we like to take a little bit of a unique approach to this. You know, a lot of the mid-size custodians, self-directed custodians, have been gobbled up by these big monstrosities. And what ends up happening with individuals and investment sponsors is you just become one of many. And, you know, I've kind of have this old school mentality. I'm still the person that writes the handwritten notes on a postcard and mails it to somebody. My business philosophy is very similar, although I do use a lot of technology, but my business philosophy is very similar. I like to create a relationship with the investment sponsors. So when we receive a new investment from any of our clients, I immediately reach out to that investment sponsor. I want to know everything about the investment, who they are. A lot of times I'm investing with them after these calls. But the relationship that we create with the investment sponsors that you work with really is meant to help you along the way. Because until the funds are available, and again, backing up just a second, you don't need a self-directed custodian until you have an alternative investment in mind. That's usually when the process is starting. And so once that investment has been identified, you now have this desire to utilize these tax-deferred or tax-free options, right? Otherwise, you're investing with cash. And many times when you see these syndications, because of them being $50,000, your first immediate reaction is, well, I've got $100,000 in my savings account. It's not making any money. Although now the interest rates have gone up, so it's making a little bit, but it's not making any money. So I'm going to use that first. And now these investment sponsors are starting to realize that this captured capital is what I call it. This captured capital that's there sitting in these IRAs, not intended to be used for many years to come, is much easier to obtain. So what happens from the preferred trust side of things is the investment sponsors are typically saying to preferred trust company, we have this client that's interested in opening up a self-directed IRA. You can either, we can do a consultation with the client so that we can advise them about opening up a self-directed IRA, what that entails, et cetera. Or you can help work, walk them through that process of, you know, here's where you go. I have this specific link that's been created by preferred trust. We have to fill out this paperwork and this paperwork. We'll send it over. We'll get this process started. They'll call you tomorrow. Within 24 hours, and usually it's a lot quicker than that, we're having conversations with the client as well. We're getting them started. We're making sure they understand exactly what they're doing. We're making sure they understand what the fees are associated in these types of transactions with preferred trust company. We're kind of just moving them along the process hand in tow, along with providing you guys the reporting of that. Every time that client moves through the process, you're getting reporting from us every single day. Where are we at? Even if we have one of those slow rolling custodians that are not letting the funds loose, you're going to know about it because I'm going to tell you. We called them for the sixth time. We should have it next week. So you'll know every step of the way what's going on with them.
That's amazing. If you're not familiar with this space, with the self-directed IRA space, that's something very, very special because there are dozens and dozens of companies that do this and nobody has that kind of a white glove approach. So that's amazing.
Yeah. I actually feel like sometimes they're like emailing me so much that I'm like, my investors just aren't moving fast enough through the process. Like on their end, I'm like, oh man, I feel like I need to, like, I feel bad, you know?
So yeah.
Yeah. The communication is really good.
Okay. I've got a really interesting question for you that I think will resonate with a lot of the audience. Why haven't I heard it? Well, of course, we've heard of this because we're in the space, right? But for the person that's going, why haven't I heard of this? First of all, why haven't I heard that I can invest in real estate in a retirement account? Like, I've never heard that was the case. And why haven't I heard of preferred trust company or NewView or UDirect or any of these custodians? Like, why is this such a secret?
Well, it's not a secret. We're trying to communicate as much as we possibly can and educate as much as we possibly can. But given the fact that I don't even know what it is nowadays, 10,000 funds are set up a day or some ridiculous amount. I say ridiculous. I guess I shouldn't say that. But a lot of them are set up. Imagine a self-directed custodian trying to communicate to those 10,000 every single day that, hey, do you know that you could educate your clients about investing, you know, without cash and having this tax-deferred, tax-free option? I think most syndications think that it's burdensome. Mm-hmm. And when they feel like it could be burdensome to them to be able to get their funds funded quickly, they don't mention it. They don't talk about it. And really the ones that are educating is not so much us. There's very few of us and a whole lot of syndications out there.
Right.
So if more syndications knew about the advantages, not only for the client, but for them, as far as this captured capital, I think they would use it a lot more. The other reason why I think it's not used or utilized a lot is because I think a lot of people feel like there's going to be tax consequences to doing this. And so they're leery of it. They're not 100% sure if you're telling them the truth or not. And they won't know until they get the tax reporting on that to, you know, be sucker punched. And so I think it's just the unknown, right? How many of us sit here and read IRS publications? Yeah, it's probably just me. So, and I'm sure there's no other listener that's like, yeah, I'm so interested in that because that is some boring stuff to read. But it's important because it does provide us an opportunity to have tax advantages that we're just not taking advantage of. But Tate, I'm going to say this to you.
Yeah.
$14 trillion in this space and almost half of that now in alternatives. People are figuring it out. And you see those numbers peak when the market has collapses and people are like, enough. I need to take control because I can't get to the end of my legacy here, the end of my days as being a pilot and end up with 50% of my retirement account. And so it is becoming more well-known.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I think we're just at the beginning of a tsunami of, as cliche as it is, Wall Street to Main Street, right?
Yes.
Taking money out of Wall Street and deploying it in Main Street with an operator who you're familiar with and you know what you're investing in and you're a direct owner.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I think one thing too, Carrie, that maybe people don't know about this, because I think only like 2% of the population knows about self-directed IRAs. It's because mm-hmm. who really pay? I mean, I know this is going to sound really terrible for most, but I mean, let's be honest, who's really paying attention to their retirement account? And I know it's really bad.
It's true.
But admitting is the first step in recovery, I think is what they say, or something like that. it's like we get pounded into our head, don't get divorced and put money in your 401k and you'll retire airlines rich. Right. And, that's like what every captain says to you, they're like, mm-hmm. Stay married and put money in your 401k. And you're like, okay. And then everybody you fly with is like, put money in your 401k. When you upgrade, take that extra money and put it in your 401k. But we're not thinking about the custodian it's going to. We're not thinking about who is the holder of those tax dollars. We're just like, okay, this is what everybody does. And oh, it's really easy. I just go on my, in portal on my airline's website and click a button. And fill out the form. And like, it just goes to this financial brokerage. This is like a more enlightening experience where it's like, okay, yeah, there's that. But then there's also like a diversification strategy of the rich where they're doing direct real estate private placements. And in order to do that inside of a retirement account, your nest egg, you've got to use a custodian that allows you to do that, which is like what Preferred Trust Company does. So mm-hmm. I think that's why, like, when I heard about this, I was like, oh, wow. And I went down the rabbit hole. I called everybody. I called Preferred, Quest, NewView. There's so many different custodian providers that do this, and everybody does it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You'll find at the end of the day, like, a lot of wire fees or a lot of transaction fees, this or that. I love your fee model. Can you kind of talk to it a little bit? And I know that might change over time, but maybe kind of speak high level to how you sort of fee, because I think it's one of the most attractive ones in the space.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it hasn't changed in 10 years. Let's just start there. Wow. Even though all this inflation's happening and all this other stuff happening, the reality of what happens within the self-directed space is you can pretty much dictate what a certain group of individuals are going to do. And the trends, they really haven't changed very much over the years. And typically what you would see in a fee schedule is the more money you have invested, the less fees you pay. Well, in a self-directed model, the more money you have invested, the more transactions are happening inside of your self-directed IRA. So our fee schedule actually goes the opposite direction. For the least amount of money that you have invested, you're going to pay $300 a year. For the most amount of money that you have invested, you're going to pay $1,000, and it just kind of ratchets up. But we have this all-encompassing fee schedule idea that, nothing takes more employee time than a client calling and saying, why'd you charge me $8 for that check? Why'd you charge me $10 for that wire? Why'd you charge me $6 for the... It's constant, right? So why not make it a trending dollar amount? When you have clients that have $50,000 invested in their IRA, chances are they're going to have three transactions a year. Three, right? Three transactions a year. So for me to do those three transactions and file their tax reporting and everything else, I have been able to determine for 10 years, think about this for a second, that it's $300, right? The next group up, they're going to have five transactions a year. This is not rocket science, people. And so instead of doing the 30 here and the 10 there and the six here and that, whatever, if you take the average, it's fair for both parties. We both win. And so that's what we've done with our fee schedule. When it comes to an actual investment, when you're investing, let's say you're investing in a syndication, the first time you invest in that syndication, I want you to know that I'm going to charge you a fee for that. The reason I'm going to do that is because I hate to say this to you, but I'm going to do a little due diligence myself. Because as the custodian, although we're not a fiduciary, we do have some liability in putting our name in front of your vested IRA. So when it says preferred trust company for the benefit of Carrie Cook Roth IRA, if Carrie Cook invests in a rental property and somebody goes onto that rental property to perform a task and steps on a nail, they're going to sue Preferred Trust Company, FBO, Carrie Cook. Notice it starts with Preferred Trust Company. So there's liabilities in being a self-directed custodian and things that we have to do to make sure that that rental property is compliant. Taxes, insurance being paid. Oh, those 12 transactions that are happening every year, hopefully, because you're getting rental income. Oh, all the expenses that are going out outside of that as well. So each type of investment does have a different transaction fee associated with it. Very few of them are annual on top of what you're paying for just your traditional ins and outs of your contributions, distributions, taxes, you know, phone calls to us, special attention that you need, audits on your account, tax reporting that you forgot to print from 4 years ago. All of that is in your one fee that you're paying each year. But as soon as you invest in something, whatever that something is, there will be a fee for that. But a lot of these syndications, the beauty of having relationships, like real relationships with syndications, is sometimes you're investing multiple times with them. So once we get to know the syndication, their paperwork, et cetera, we drop our fees significantly for your subsequent investments that you're making with them. So that's just how I operate. I think that's good business to get to know these relationships so that you can reduce the fees to the clients. So that's what you'll see with us. It's really basic. There's no hidden behind the scenes gotcha fee or any of that. It's not necessary.
Yeah, what I love is some custodians will like charge you $300 per year per deal you do. And man, right. You do like 10, 12, 15 deals. That's a lot of money. So this is just like one, like, yeah, there's an initial fee to, you know, help you with your paperwork and all that when you go in. But once you're in, you're done. And it's just that same flat AUM fee for how much money you have with PTC. So
correct.
And there's a lot of annoyances too in the you know, the wire in fee, the wire out fee, it's just endless.
So yeah, it's chipping away at your returns at the end of the day.
Yeah. But you have to do that when departments don't work together well, right? Because each department has their own set of fees. Right. Here, we work together as a team. So, you know, when we charge a fee, every department knows about it, right? Because, you know, who was involved in it? It's not segregated. It's very much a team environment.
Well, Carrie, let's kind of wrap this up. How can we learn more? Where can our investors go to learn more about IRA investing? And how can they get in touch with you or maybe one of your team members that, you know, can help them through the sign-up process if they wanted to convert a self-directed IRA?
Yeah. So first and foremost, obviously, you know, our website is packed full of education. So educate yourself. So preferredtrustcompany.com. You know, go on to our blogs, check it out. I mean, I write myself. So the stuff that you see on there, I mean, and a lot of our employees write. So it's not just me. I mean, we're all writing about different topics to make sure that we're educating. We also have a podcast as well. So we do podcasts just to educate about self-directed IRAs, which is a great way to just, you know, when you have 30 minutes, listen, see what's going on in this environment, some of the risks that you should be considering, learn about other things that we're not talking about today. You can call us if you want to, you know, just give us a shout and just chat. We don't charge you. Pick up the phone, ask, send in your 401k plan. Let us look at it. Who knows? You may have one that allows 10% to, while you're employed, to be diversified. We've seen more and more of those. So, you know, pick up the phone and call us. You can call us at 888-990-7892. The best way, if you just want to do email communication, you're one of those people who's like, yeah, I was on your website. I don't really talk to anybody. You know, we know we've got those out there. Just send us an email at info@ptcemail.com. And you know, somebody will respond right back to you. We do have a motto around here about emails and phone calls. Every email, every phone call is responded to same day. So if you happen to have to leave a message, you know, please let us know. I'll be honest, about 4:50, we probably stop. You know, 5 o'clock's our deadline. But you'd be surprised. I see them still plugging away at 4:58, just getting that last response in to make sure we have, you know, nice fresh slate the next day. So shoot us an email, ask us any question that you want, and we will answer it.
You know, us pilots are on the road a lot. Are we allowed to stop by and set up an account that way, or is it only online?
Sure. Okay. You've been to our office before.
Yeah. Remember, where are you located?
It's in
Vegas. We talked about the fakeness here. So yeah, we're in Las Vegas. Yeah, we're in Las Vegas. So if you are ever here, and ironically, you know, if I pulled the shades behind me, we're right across the street from the airport.
Yeah.
And so we watch planes land all day long. We love it.
Like a $2 Uber ride or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So like, yeah. It's perfect. So if you're thinking about it or want to learn more too, you know, their team is all really cool and fun to hang out with. I spent the day with PTC, I don't know, last year this time, maybe midsummer or something like that. So
yeah.
Oh,
well, Carrie, I got one
for the show notes really quick. I also wanted to, I interviewed Carrie on our first Friday meetup. So I wanted to put the link to the YouTube video in that, because we didn't talk about these basic things. We actually went like a level down deeper.
Perfect. So, link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, link in the show notes. My interview with Carrie, I don't know, it was a few months ago. So,
yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah. We did get in the weeds on that one, though. That was fun.
We sure did.
Well, if you want to learn more, go check it out. Carrie, I've got one more thing that I just want to touch on. We don't have to answer really any information about it, but I don't want to leave our military guys behind. Guys and gals who may be exiting the service and coming over to the airlines, they've got thrift savings plans or TSPs. I know that I've gotten questions before about is it possible to roll those over into a self-directed IRA? So can we quickly just touch on that? And if anybody has questions, just reach out to Carrie.
I'm going to give you the best answer I know how. Send me the documents. Let me look at them. And if there is an option for it to be rolled over without any consequences to you, then we will make it happen. They're all a little bit different. And so we want to make sure that we're advising you specifically to what your documents identify. So send it over to me. Nothing is impossible, but some things could be complicated depending upon the language in those documents.
Excellent. Great. We'll leave it at that. Carrie, thank you so much for coming on. This has been excellent.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks, Carrie.
Take care.
All right. Bye.